Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and Hotep. Welcome to the Care to Read Room, and thank you so very much for joining us on this evening of National Black History Month. We'd like to thank each and every one of you for joining us. We know you could have frequented many other rooms, but we're glad that you came along and joined us for the holiday. We are still in the festivities of celebrating Black History Month, and we'd like to tell you that we want to wind down now because we're coming up on our last day tomorrow for the shortest month in the month, the shortest month in the whole year, as a matter of fact, but we will be going right into working with National History Month for Women. I hope that you are ready this evening. We're still continuing on the path to talk about the struggle, the bureaucracy, the possibilities for women to carve them a place in society. We're looking at women rising in the nation. We're looking at women who are forced into child marriages and those third world countries who prevent women from going to school. So we've been advocating for quite a while, opening up opportunities, voicing our opinion, and becoming an advocate for women all over the world. And this month's segment, we've been focusing in on looking at women who are in law school or who are on a path to enroll in law school. And we've been talking to law professors as well as law students. And this evening we have joining us back Mrs. Ebony Smith, who will be joining us back for a short segment of the show. She'll be talking a little bit about her career in law and her path for law. And then we also are going to have another young lady joining us this evening, and Mrs. Wilson will be coming along to talk about her experience in law as well. And she'll be coming on at the second half of the show. Now, what we'd like to do is say hello to our guests, and we will be doing a little house cleaning, and we'll meet you back in the atmosphere. But before that, why don't you lock that dial in at 646-478-0270. Keep that dial right there. And we'll have our chat rooms open for those people who would like to chat about it or would like to call in. Please do call in and patronize our room. We certainly encourage you to do so. Now let me say hello to our guests and greet our guests. Hello, caller number 313.
Hi, this is Christina.
Hi, Christina. How are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
Just fine. And thank you so very much for joining us. And I do appreciate you responding to our call. Last night's evening was me alone. However, we're glad to get you back on a reschedule. Ladies and gentlemen, I have Mrs. Christina on the line. And she is a grad student. She is a law student. And we will go ahead and start talking with her. Let me give you a little information about who she is and a little bit about her background. I met Christina in Chicago. while at Loyola University. Christina Wilson is her name, and she is a second-year student at Loyola University Chicago School of Law, and she was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan, ladies and gentlemen, after majoring in sports management with specializing in enterprises. She received her bachelor's degree in science, education, and human development. She developed from Bowl Green State. Okay, am I pronouncing that right? Bowl Green State University in May 2011. She currently is in the area of sports legal intern at Selvin Sports Enterprises, LLC. Okay, and she hopes to continue working in the area of sports and entertainment in the field of law after she graduates. And I think this is a very good combination. Sports law is one of the up-and-coming areas. And for those of you who are out there who are in sports and would like to talk to Christina, please do call in and prepare your questions. We will be taking questions this evening as well. Now, we'd like to welcome Ms. Christina for the first time to the Cure to Read Room. Ms. Christina, this is a family and children's room. We do a lot with educators and a lot with family, but this month we are focusing in on our rituals for Black History Month. We acknowledge our flag and our national anthem, as well as our rituals. So if you don't mind, we call out the names of our ancestors and acknowledge our heroes and sheroes, and we'd like to invite you over to the throne so that if you have deceased loved ones or heroes and sheroes that you would like to contribute, you're welcome to do so. And at this time, I will be pouring libation, and I will ask that you be a part, and if you choose not to, that's fine as well. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to welcome you to the Care to Read Room. As we do our libation, we acknowledge our higher self, who is God, and we acknowledge God as being the highest person that we can give praises to, and we give libations to our Ola Dulamare, which is the highest force in our lives, and we say Ashe. I'd like to also pour libation to my mother's spirit, who has been deceased and made her transition, and I say Ashe. I pour libation to my father's spirit, and I say Robert Jenkins Ashe. I like to pour libations to the East and call on my ancestors and all of the heroes and sheroes who made it possible for us to be here today. I like to call on Sheikh S. Diop as the outstanding writer, and I say Ashe. I like to call on the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I say Ashe. Harriet Tubman, Ashe. Dr. Carruthers, Ashe. I like to call on Nat King Cole, Ashe. I like to call on Louis Armstrong, Ashe. I like to call on Sweet Coretta King, Ashe. Dr. Martin Luther King, Ashe. And if there's any that you would like to call on, Ms. Wilson, you can do so now at this time.
I would like to call on my grandmother, Barbara Rowley. She passed away about 7 years ago, and she's one of the strongest influences I've had in my life. So.
Ashe. Is there anyone else?
Not that I can think of right now.
Okay. Well, thank you so very much, and we say Ashe, and we do this in honor of our tradition to keep our heritage alive and acknowledging our ancestors, because it's their shoulders that we stand on, and we say Ashe. And we will be taking a station identification, and we'll meet you right back in the air, so stay tuned. We know that we're winners, and we'll be right back at you in the atmosphere. Stay tuned.
Y'all ready?
Stanley, welcome back. You're in the Care to Read room, and you've got your Omi Inca live coming to you straight from my studio. Once again, I'd like to welcome you to our segment, Where Girls Are Rising. And we know that girls are rising right here in the United States, and they're rising quickly in all of the professions, especially in the area of law. And we've been perpetuating those law students to talk about their experience. And today we have Ms. Christina Wilson in our chat room, in our Care to Read room. And we'd like for you to patronize her by inquiring about her experience in law as she's been engaged in her second year in law school. And we'd like to have you call in if you don't mind. So lock that dial in at 646-478-0270. And we'd like to bring Ms. Christina on right now to have her tell us a little bit about herself and what inspired her to go into law and what has been her most challenging effort while in law school. Ms. Christina, you have the atmosphere.
Okay, like was mentioned earlier, my name is Christina Wilson. I am a 2L at Loyola University Chicago School of Law. I'm from Detroit, Michigan. I graduated from Bowling Green State University with a degree in sport management. And now I'm in my second year of law school, and the most challenging thing so far in law school has been the adjustment between going from being an undergraduate to becoming a law student. And your first year is like the hardest year you have because you have a certain amount of classes. It's a lot of adjustments, not just academically but socially. And also, it's just I came straight from undergrad. Some students take time off. I went right in from undergrad. So just getting used to a new city, getting used to a new atmosphere, getting used to a new method of thinking and also a new grading system was probably the most challenging thing that I had to endure in law school so far. But that is usually the challenge for first-year law students is the adjustment and also overcoming the academic requirements of the grades that you must get. It's the most stressful year because your grades are the most important. And just overcoming that, it took me a semester to get used to being in a new city with new classmates, a new teaching style, an entirely new examination style, and just a new thinking process. So now that I'm in my fourth semester at Loyola, I've gotten into the groove of everything. I understand what my professors expect of me. I understand what it takes to think like a lawyer. And I'm still improving, of course, but it's not as big of a challenge as it was when I first got here.
Now, Christina, I heard you say something that was so pertinent, the difference in testing, your examination. When you're called upon to take an examination, how is it different from the traditional way?
Well, in undergrad, like when you get a certain percentage grade, whether I know that Bowling Green State University, we were graded on a strict letter grade. There were no A minuses or A pluses. So if you got between a 90 and a 99, you got an A. And if you got between an 89 and an 80, that was a B, and that was your grade. However, in law school, you are graded on a curve. So a certain amount of students are going to get a certain grade based off the percentage that is allotted for that grade based on the curve. So you'll have a 10% of the students will get A's in the class and then another 10 or 15% A minuses. And it usually goes into a bell curve where the majority of the students at the school will get around a B, and then there's a downward curve. So the majority will get a B, and then there is a smaller amount of students that get an A or a C or D. So it's not a guarantee that if you get a 90% in the class or 90% on your exam that you're going to have an A. Because if the curve is set at 100% and a lot of your classmates and you have and the 90% is the lowest grade in the class, then you won't have an A. For 90%, you'll have a C or a B minus for a 90%. So that is the biggest adjustment is being graded on a curve, knowing that only a certain amount of students are going to get a certain grade, and basically that is a lot of competition between students to get those top grades.
So my question to you, is that a good thing for you, or has that been a bit of adjustment for you?
It was a large adjustment because it's, in undergrad you have students from all walks of life who have grade point averages that usually range, but when you start to get into the graduate level studies, especially in law school, you're dealing with probably the top 10-15% of most undergraduate students that graduated. So there are no students that really aren't the top of their class going into law school. So it's a lot of smart people competing for the grades. So just because you don't get an A in the class, that's one of the adjustments. Like, we're used to being the shining star in the class or being one of the top students in the class, and then you don't get an A in the class, that's probably the biggest shock to our system. But to me, it depends on how the class is. Like, very difficult classes, the curve kind of helps, because you may, like, if you were to go outright and you would have gotten a 65% in the class outright, that would be a D. But in a curve class, if the highest person in the class got a 65, that's an A. So depending on the class, it depends, but of course we all prefer the classes that aren't curved.
I see. Now, tell me a little bit more about the profession of law. What do you see as being challenging for a female gender, and have you come up against any bureaucracy that is a little bit different for females opposed to males? Do you see the males given any advantage when they present and when they discuss the cases? I know that documentation shows that women are given far more time for response time to a question than males are. I did a little bit of study and found out that it is assumed that girls know the answer to questions, so there's a lot of waiting time for them to respond opposed to the male. Now, do you see that just the opposite in the classroom of law?
Well, being in law school at Loyola is slightly different because the majority of the students at the school, the higher percentage are female. So when you're seeing response times to questions and things of that nature, you're going to see more females in the class. So it's kind of hard to really measure whether or not the response time is longer. But I do know in the field of law, one of the things that is still prevalent, is getting better, but has always been a challenge, is for women who are on the partnership track at big law firms or any law firm, when they're on the partnership track, and it's like you're working a lot of hours, you're putting in a lot of time to reach the partner status, which is the ultimate goal of becoming a lawyer at certain firms, is you want to reach becoming a partner. And some women then longer ago, but it's starting to get better now, have to choose between starting a family and staying on that partnership track. It's when you decide to stop and have children, it becomes a little bit more difficult for you to work 70 hours a week or 60 hours a week, putting in extra hours when you have children, especially young children at home that you want to cater to. So now it's getting a lot better. You see more women partners in firms. It's still not a lot, but there are more, and it is advancement because women are stepping up in the field saying, I have the legal right to take maternity leave. I do want to have a family. And now a lot of law firms are stepping up, and they're allowing some women lawyers as well as men lawyers, when they decide to start families, to have time off or work part-time to compensate for having or starting a family. But it's still a pretty big challenge.
I think that medical family leave is one of the criteria for the benefit package, and by law, it's a federal law, I think, that a female can take up to 2 years for medical family leave when they're going on a leave of absence for having their children. So things will be getting better in that area. Now, let's talk a little bit. Can we talk here a little bit up front and close and personal about the experience in the sports arena? What type of athlete were you when you were in school, or were you an athlete at all? And what drew you to the athletic aspect of career in law?
Well, I started off playing basketball back when I was 12 years old, and that took me into high school. And I was playing basketball. My basketball coach happened to be my gym teacher at the time, and I used to run laps around all the girls, and I used to laugh at them when I was running the gym because they weren't that fast. So he started to put me in line with the boys, and I could outrun quite a few of them, so he called in the track coach. And I started running track when I was in high school and playing basketball, but ultimately because I needed a scholarship for school, I thought that track had more opportunities for scholarships. So then I ultimately ended up running track in high school, and then ran track for my first year of college until I was injured. But fortunately for me, I had an academic scholarship, so my injury didn't impact my education. But ultimately, I chose going into the sport field not necessarily because I was an athlete. I always knew I wanted to be a lawyer since I was a little kid. Like, my mom told me, Christina, you can be the first black female president of the United States. And I actually believed her. So I started doing research as to what the president does and everything. And I figured you had to go to law school to know the laws and everything. So I decided to be a lawyer then. And through my curriculum in high school, I started doing accounting and finance. And when I was looking for a college major, I saw sport management at a few of the different schools that I was looking at, and doing research in the sport management, I could combine my love of business and the law and actually go into a field that is predominantly with sports. And by me having a background in athletics, I understood the needs that there were for athletes out there that want to become professionals. So that's when I decided to go into the sport and entertainment law
sector. Let me interrupt you for a second. What about those agents? Are you in competition with those agents who also have somewhat of a background in this area of managing your clients? Do you have to compete with the agents?
Well, it depends on which realm of sport and entertainment law I decide to go into. Me personally, I do want to go into athlete representation. So if I do go into athlete representation, then I would be in direct competition with sports agents. And at times it seems like it's a slight disadvantage because I will be a lawyer. We're governed by the American Bar Association. So there are certain sets of rules and things that I can and cannot do under my legal obligation as a licensed attorney that sports agents don't have to abide by. So I would be in direct competition with them if that is what I choose. But also on another side, as being an attorney, a lot of different sports teams and leagues, all of them just about have a legal counsel or someone, a lawyer for their team or law firms that do their work for teams and organizations. So that is a route that I can go in, not necessarily representing athletes, but being on the other side of the table representing the team, the organization, or the league. And in that realm, I won't be competing with or against agents unless it's about an issue with a player. So it's more opportunities as a lawyer.
I am so impressed with your tenacity and your courage and all of the things that you're up against. You're up against a lot of male-dominated profession. At the same time, you're up against weighing the decision to hold out on the agent. So I want to give you a drum roll for that, Christina. So stay tuned. Let me give you a drum roll here. And I'm just so proud of what you are telling me. Being an athlete isn't the easiest thing in the world. Some of us can do many things and be multitasked. I ran track when I was in school also. I ran 50-yard dash. What were you running when you were in track?
I was a high hurdler, a low hurdler, a long jumper, and a sprinter. So I did all sprints between 60-meter and indoor, and up to the 400 meter, even though I didn't really like running 400s.
Now, is there anyone else in your family that's an athlete, fathers, brothers?
Well, my little brother, he was a basketball player and a football player in high school. But that's really about it. A lot of cousins, they're all in uncles and aunts and everything. They're athletes, but I'm in a male-dominated family, so mostly my uncles and my cousins and my little brother, they were the athletes. I was the only girl, and when I played basketball, I played on teams with guys because I was the only girl.
Now, Christina, you know that in this profession, you go to school for your family and your community. A long time ago, during the Depression time and during the time when we were just up from slavery, right out of the Jim Crow laws, there were many lawyers who went to law school to be able to service their community and their family because there were so many issues in court and we needed proper representation. And so a lot of law programs were formed for low-income people at that time during Thurgood Marshall's time. Now, how do you feel about those low-income areas where there are the micro centers and a large percent of young lawyers go and give their time to work in low socioeconomic areas or pro bono areas? How do you feel about that? And do you feel that black people deserve to have some representation by their own African-American lawyers?
Well, I feel like pro bono work is one of the cornerstones of our profession. We go through a lot to get to become lawyers, but when we get there, our job is to give back to the community and to be able to help people with our positions. And in even some states now, they're trying to institute a pro bono requirement for law students, law graduates who are then taking the bar exam. So now in the state of New York, started in 2015, it'll be a requirement for 50 hours or more of pro bono service prior to being admitted to the bar. So I feel like definitely is a necessity and that all lawyers with should give back because we have received a lot. And it is a pretty wealthy profession. You stand to make a lot of money going into the private sector. So giving back and helping those who really can't afford to have representation is ideal to me. And although I'm going into sport and entertainment law, I do want to be able to give back to my community because I'm from the inner city of Detroit. So I know what it's like to have to struggle and have to do whatever you have to possibly can to get through school and to get everything. And sometimes I've seen a lot of people that I know in my neighborhood who needed appropriate representation. They may not have necessarily committed the crime, but because they didn't have adequate representation, they weren't able to get off of a charge or get a lesser sentence because of what happened. So maybe it's like because the public sector is so difficult for people to get higher salaries in the public sector, a lot of great attorneys turn down positions in the public sector to try to make money to pay off the student loans or however, whatever the rationale is for going into the private sector. So having that pro bono requirement allows us, even though we're in the private sector, to give back to those who really are in need of help. So
I had a chance to read up on some of the deans of the law schools, and I was rather shocked what I found out. And most of them are echoing the same thing. They're all saying that they're concerned about tuition and the high cost of law school is somewhere around the tune of $100,000 to $150,000 for a law student to go through school, and they do definitely have to subsidize their tuition through loans and grants, as many loans as they can to make it through. My question is, does the cost of law school justify the means to an end? And will you possibly see more paralegals being teamed up and fewer law students who have their license because of the cost of carrying on these lawyers who are very, very expensive? And at the same time, do you think that the deans of the schools are going to come together and look at cutting costs so the students can be able to afford to go to law school?
Well, I really hope so, because they are correct. By the time I graduate from law school, I'm looking at possibly $150,000 or more being of student loans that I had to take out for school. So it is a substantial amount of cost, but I do think that I do want to become an attorney, and that's the cost that I have to pay to do what I want to do. But I think it goes beyond just law school. The cost of education for law school is substantial, but the cost of going to college now has skyrocketed so much that a lot of students come into law school with a substantial amount of debt, and then they incur a lot more debt in law school, and that may be the deterrent from students deciding to go to law school and maybe getting a paralegal degree because they necessarily couldn't afford not just to get a bachelor's degree but to go to law school on top of that. And I do know students that have gone to less expensive schools that may be lower ranked because of the cost of education. So I feel like there are always going to be people that can't afford law school. There are always going to be people who, no matter what, is going to go, no matter how much it costs, they'll figure out a way to pay for it. That's kind of how I was. I'm like, okay, I was fortunate enough to have a full ride scholarship for undergrad, but no matter how much I have to take out, I'm going to try to go to law school. But one thing that I highly recommend it is to make sure you have good credit going into law school, because the ability to be able to take out loans is a big thing, because without having that assistance and having bad credit, it's almost impossible to pay for law school because of the substantial cost. So hopefully if the deans can influence the cost, hopefully nationwide there will be an outcry saying that not just law school but grad school in general and also undergraduate cost of education needs to go down so that more students will have the opportunities to become the professions that they would like to go into.
Now, you mentioned something so true. I went to paralegal school after getting my undergraduate degree. The cost was a big factor for me because I was working in the job for Motorola at the time, so I went to paralegal school about 20 years ago. And now they have several tests that you can take that would actually make you more marketable. And I went on to grad school and postgraduate. And the thing I don't understand, they've created a certificate of advanced standing, which that certificate could just be going right into the PhD program, but they're trying to prep people for taking the certificate of advanced study, which is basically research, 3 years of research, which they allow you to transfer 12 hours over. But most of those programs are cohort programs who don't accept hours that you transfer over. And I could not see the validity of taking an advanced certificate because it carries no weight really in society, and it doesn't move you up on the pay scale. It's just another piece of paper. So we have to really be careful about getting just another piece of paper. So I just recently finished up with an endorsement. So I know exactly what you're saying about the cost, but they do allow teachers to go back, and they'll tell us if we go back and work in the profession, they will forgive our loans if we work in a lower socioeconomic area. I understand that's happening for law students as well if they go back to lower socioeconomic areas, that some of those programs will forgive their loans. Now, let me say this to you. The profession, I understand that there are also law students who are also participating and working in pre-college programs such as the Law Academy. Are you practicing in the Law Academy by teaching street law as well?
I'm not currently in the street law class, but there was a call out for all students who wanted to participate in the Law Academy. We get a lot of different invites from the law school about different community service opportunities that are available. And when I met you, I was actually a last-minute call because I wasn't able to do the entire program for both weeks. But a few students weren't able to make it due to weather issues. So because I lived right across the street from the school, I was able to make it, and I really enjoyed working with the kids. And it was like a lot of them at first, you know, it's early in the morning. They didn't really, you know, nobody wants to be at school on the weekend especially I think it was their spring break as well. So I could understand they were kind of tired and everything, but really getting them into it and showing them what possibilities there are, not just in law. We, like, I think the purpose of the Law Academy wasn't just to get people to want to go to law school, but just to get them thinking about going to college in general. It's like we were stressed to let them know, like, don't just think that we're trying to get you to go to law school and become lawyers. Of course, that would be wonderful. But our main goal for those students was to get them to go to college and to see what possibilities are out there in any type of profession. And just being a part of that was one of the most fulfilling things I've done this year. And so I'm not a direct participant in the street law class that does that on a regular basis, but I did I was happy that I was called for the opportunity to participate in that specific program.
Thank you so much. And, Christina, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us this evening and giving us your time. And I say two thumbs up to you and keep on going, girl, because you're going to go all the way and you will succeed. And I believe in you and I know you will. So we want to invite you back if you'd like to come back. And we'd like to also say thank you so much once again.
Y'all ready?
And stay tuned because you're winning. Have a great evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Say yeah!
We have two guests that will be demonstrating duality tomorrow, talking about their entrepreneurship and their business working abroad in Africa, as well as working stateside. You definitely want to join us tomorrow from the Mr. and Mrs. Digham, and they will be talking about their product and how to establish your entrepreneurship and business overseas in Africa. So join us tomorrow at 10 o'clock. We won't be on at 10:30 tomorrow, but 10 o'clock. So do patronize our chat rooms. We'd like to see you back here. And remember, where girls are rising. They're rising right here in the Midwest, right here in Indiana, in Chicago. They're rising. And you just spoke to Mrs. Christine Wilson. She's rising and going straight forward on into law school. Why don't you wish her well, ladies and gentlemen? Our students are really, really committing themselves, and I'm very proud of them, because if we can't do anything else, we're going to pull women up by the bootstraps and help them and encourage them to stay in the game, because once you have education, it's very difficult for someone to discriminate against you. And because Black African American History Month is here, we're pushing women to go into their desire, into their dreams. And we're asking them to look for financial aid wherever they can and to make their dream a reality. I know I've had an opportunity to complete my education, and I want to encourage other women to do the same thing. And we thank you all from Loyola University, those students who have come in to talk about their career. We thank you so very much. We thank you, Mrs. Christina. We thank you, Mrs. Ebony. We also thank you, Professor, for coming in to talk to us about your experience at Loyola University. And we will have a reunion of all of those law students and professors at a later date. We'll bring you back and we'll talk about what has changed for you and what do you need encouragement with. So thank you so much for being on the scene where girls are rising. And don't forget, March 6th, we will be featuring a film at the Star Theater, Where Girls Are Rising, and that will be a story that's told about 10 different women from 10 different societies, and their life stories will be told. We want you to go out to patronize us by buying your tickets online and attending wherever you can that film. It's going to be shown throughout the United States, and it's going to be shown right here at the Star Theater in Merrillville, Indiana. So please do go out and get your tickets and patronize us. And thank you so very much, ladies and gentlemen. And we will see you tomorrow at 10 o'clock p.m.
Y'all ready?